There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good afternoon. Welcome along to The Grill. We are live here at Barasti, where the game is always on. 5 days and counting until the 2018 FIFA World Cup. It all kicks off in Russia with the host taking on Saudi Arabia on Thursday evening. We will continue to build up to the biggest show on earth over the course of the next 3 hours. We'll also be looking back on what has been a very, very good afternoon or good morning if you are a fan of the Golden State Warriors in the world of basketball. They are once again the champions. We'll have reaction to that. Plus, we'll be asking what's next for LeBron James as he hints at another high-profile exit from the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Stanley Cup Finals to look back on as well. And what a day of live sport we've got for you over the course of the next 3 hours. There's Rugby Union Internationals aplenty. We're keeping an eye right now on Australia against Ireland. We're also building up to South Africa against England. There's the French Open Women's Final. Simona Halep looking to make it a fourth time lucky when she takes on the reigning US Open champion Sloane Stephens. That one getting underway at 5 p.m. There's golf to tell you about in Europe. Golf to tell you about in the States as well. There's cricket over at Lord's. There's the F1 as well. We're building up to qualifying for the Canadian Grand Prix. And if all of that wasn't enough, there's a bit of squash on our doorstep as well. You're listening to The Grill. We are live from Barasti.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
It certainly is. A warm welcome then to The Grill. No Tom Ucker this afternoon. He is off, well, doing something that I don't think I can quite say on the airwaves of Dubai 103.8. He's a busy man. He is rubbing shoulders with royalty over in the UK. It is myself, Chris McCarty, and I have drafted in the big boys. I've got a big forward line because it is all things rugby internationals, so I've went big. So I have, alongside myself this afternoon, it is the big Safa himself, Carl Van Roosevelt. A very good afternoon to you, Carlito.
Yeah, very good afternoon, Mr. Chris McCarty. How have you been? I haven't seen you in a while. You're looking very well,
thank
I
you.
Might add. But as you say, action-packed afternoon of rugby. Of course, the big one kicking off at 7:05 this evening. South Africa take on England. That's happening in the Republic of South Africa this evening. Argentina take on Wales. That's our late kickoff. Currently live, we've got Australia taking on Ireland. That's, of course, live at Suncorp Stadium in Brisbane. And the Aussies are leading the Irish 8-6.
Indeed, we will keep you up to date. We'll also be looking back on what turned out to be a very comfortable morning for the All Blacks. 52-11 victory over France. That doesn't tell its own story. We'll get into the minutiae of that particular story as we progress through this afternoon. And just as well, with the All Blacks winning, that we've drafted in the one and only Kiwi that I know, Mark Archer. Very good afternoon.
Good to see you, Chris. Good to see you, Carl. Looking as though you've been spending some time with the tanning machine there, Carl. But comfortable win for the All Blacks at Eden Park. Of course, they haven't lost at Eden Park since 1992, so it's been a long time since anyone's defeated them there. Comfortable win then, but they were given some tough moments in the first half. France led at half-time, 11 points to 8, but the All Blacks bounced back, I think, with 8 unanswered second-half tries. They showed their strength and depth. They showed plenty of power in the last 20 minutes to run away with that match. So, plenty of rugby on this afternoon. So if you're looking at somewhere to watch that rugby, of course, massive matches. We're half-time in the Australians-Irish match now. Then we've got at 7 o'clock, South Africa hosting England. Fascinating matchup that. And then later on, Wales travelling all the way to Argentina. But looking forward to recapping. NBA season's over. Stanley Cup's been won. Plenty of conclusions in American sports, some test cricket, and a little bit of warm-up action for the Australian ODI seed. That series, the tri-series, gets underway with the English on Wednesday, but they've got a warm-up match at Lord's against Middlesex. We'll bring you all the runs and wickets as they come from the home of cricket later today.
4001 on the text. Get in touch with us this afternoon, you guys out there on the roads, or whether you're listening at home. Get involved in the conversation. And I want to kick things off. There's an awful lot I appreciate to get through this afternoon, whether it's live or whether it's looking back on some of the big stories from the past week. You've said something there, though, Mark Archer. Got to go all the way back to 1992 for the last time that a team beat the All Blacks at Eden Park in Auckland. I'll put it to you boys, 4001, if you can give us your suggestions. Is that the best record? Is beating the All Blacks the toughest thing to do at Eden Park in sport?
Absolutely. I can't agree more. And it's a fortress, and they've dominated the rugby world. You know, I think since the 2007 World Cup, there's been no real team to really touch them. And today, after 40 minutes, everybody thought France was in the game, and I was even kind of getting excited. And then all of a sudden, you know, they just brought off some ammunition off the bench, and seven tries to not one try by France in that second half. And I just think that shows the class of the All Blacks today. Also fantastic to see. It was quite a family affair for the All Blacks today. The Barrett brothers, three of them playing, and then, of course, the two Whitelock brothers. So, good afternoon for the All Blacks. But as I said, Chris, it's going to be very, very tough to beat them this year, especially in New Zealand.
We will talk a little bit about Rafael Nadal. He goes for an unprecedented, a scarcely believable.
Here's the question for you. Here's the question for you then. Who is more tougher to beat, Rafa Nadal on clay at Roland Garros in a final, or the All Blacks at Eden Park?
Well, given the fact that Rafa's been beaten twice on clay, Robin Soderling did it to him in 2009, Novak Djokovic did it to him in the quarterfinals back in 2015.
Not in a final, though.
He's 10-0 in the final of a French Open, is Rafa Nadal. Of course, there's no right or wrong answer. It's very difficult to come up with that, but it is remarkable to think you've got to go 1992. And listen, a lot of listeners will know we've talked about the All Blacks, about them being the standard bearer, not just in rugby, but for all sporting entities. They are that good. The levels that they reach consistently is something that I think an awful lot of teams, whether it's in rugby, whether it's in football, whether it's in basketball, they can all aspire to. You're a Kiwi, Mark Archer. You know what a special environment and a special venue and stadium that Eden Park is. What is it about that venue that makes it so difficult for travelling teams to go to and struggle to beat the All Blacks?
I don't know if I've got the answer there. Eden Park's our biggest sporting venue. We host our biggest cricket matches there. It's a dual-purpose stadium. But as a rugby ground, it has been. It's our biggest stadium by far. I think the capacity is around 46, 47,000. And, you know, it's tough to explain why. It's obviously the biggest rugby-playing population in New Zealand, so they get pretty big full houses in there watching the All Blacks here. I've got to say, you know, we don't have massive All Blacks support. We're not vocal. We're not over. Oh, just be seeing some action here, Carl. What's happening here?
I think CJ Stander, is it? CJ Stander for Ireland just going over. The referee's going to take a look at this one. It is Ireland against Australia. We should apologise for breaking away from that little conversation. There is a match ongoing over our shoulders. There is Australia taking on Ireland in this match down at the Suncor Stadium in Brisbane. It's currently Australia 8, Ireland 6, but the official is going to the TMO, so we'll keep an eye on this one.
Just to go back, it's not a particularly hostile ground. It's not somewhere where the fans are so sort of aggressive, or it's just an amazing record that the All Blacks have fashion there over the last two or three decades. It's strange. You've got to put that into perspective, though. The British and Irish Lions did get a draw there last year in that final test match of that series. So whilst they haven't lost a match, it's fair to say they've had that draw.
They've had one draw since now and 1992. It is a remarkable record. And well, Archie's posed the question, what is it more difficult to do, beating the All Blacks at Eden Park or beating Rafa Nadal in a French Open final? That is the task that is facing Dominic Thiem tomorrow afternoon. Rafa Nadal, I watched it yesterday, his semi-final dismantling of Juan Martín Del Potro was something to behold. He was serving beautifully, the forehand, the movement is there. There is no one, I don't feel, and I've said this, and Robbie Greenfield at the start of this fortnight was saying this is Rafa Nadal's time where he's going to lose. Someone is going to upset him. Not on the evidence of yesterday.
But in all honesty, can we take serious what Robbie Greenfield says? Because he also thinks Pete Sampras is the greatest tennis player of all time. But, Chris, you know, just to add to what you said, I think the movement has impressed me the most of Nadal for Roland Garros 2018. He's moving so wonderfully. He seems to be pain-free. You know, he just seems to be in control of everything. And honestly, I don't see Thiem giving him any headache tomorrow. I think he'll be winning his 10th... 11th French Open tomorrow. And as I said, he's been in fine form. And the whole tennis business, if you want to call it as such, has been so funny because it's the old guys coming through again. Nadal being the dominant force, Federer being the dominant force. These guys are all in their mid to late 30s, and there doesn't seem to be a youngster really, you know, grabbing the bull by the horns and really leading the tennis forward. It always seems to be the old guys, but I think Rafa Nadal is in fine form at the moment.
You could almost argue that he had a little bit of luck in the quarterfinal matchup against
Diego Schwartzman.
Where he just didn't seem to get much momentum. Schwartzman took the first set off Nadal during this event, and then the rain came. He got a chance to regather his thoughts, go away, have a sleep, came back, and then dominated the next three sets to win 3-1. So he's been relatively untroubled. He hasn't had to play five-set matches, so he should be quite fresh. We know he's super fit, and you just got to think it's a massive ask of Dominic Thiem, who will go on and probably win some Grand Slams in
the
future.
Undoubtedly.
But Rafa Nadal... I've got a third one to add to our question. What's tougher to win? Rafa Nadal, Roland Garros, All Blacks at Eden Park, or Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals?
Well, let's go there right now if we can, because I guess that is the starting point of today's show. And as I say, the text lines are open, 4001. Get involved in the conversation. There is a lot to get through. We will build up to the women's final over at the French Open. We'll keep you up to date with what's going on in the golf. There's cricket to tell you about as well, and we will be looking back on some of the friendlies ahead of, I'll say it again, the FIFA World Cup. It all kicks off on Thursday. But the Golden State Warriors, game four earlier today against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And once again, Mark Archer, the Golden State Warriors setting the bar very high. Too good for Cleveland Cavaliers. It was a blowout victory. And they are now a dynasty, a third NBA title in the past 4 years.
Yeah, they've been the dominant team in the NBA. And albeit they didn't win, they weren't the best team in the regular season. You knew when the playoffs came around and they finally got past Houston in a seven-match series, they had too many weapons for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Look, LeBron James did all he could. We've just found out that he was injured in game one after that disappointing J.R. Smith decision. But too many weapons again from the Golden State Warriors. If Kevin Durant doesn't get you, Steph Curry does. If Steph Curry have an off night, Klay Thompson steps up. They've got the role players around that. Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, just do what they have to do. The men off the bench, Sean Livingston comes in. They all play parts. And it just works so well. They're unselfish as a team. They're all happy to share in each other's success. They don't hog the ball. They move it quickly. They look for the best shot. And when you've got three of the best shooters in NBA history, one of them's going to fire every night. And that's what's happened. Kevin Durant, he was named the 2018 NBA Finals MVP for a second consecutive season. He averaged 28 points, 10 boards, 7 assists. It could have been Steph Curry. Steph Curry scored 37 points last night, 22 three-pointers in the series. So It is an amazing thing that Steve Kerr's managed to mesh together so much talented players to play as a team, but unselfish, and then just go on and celebrate success. Let's have a quick listen to the final stages of the Golden State Warriors winning their third NBA title.
Kyle LeBron will throw it up, and now they'll dribble it out. Final seconds here of this 2018 NBA season. There's the buzzer. There's a new dynasty in the NBA. The Golden State Warriors champions once again, back-to-back titles, 3 in 4 years, and the latest with a sweep.
You mentioned they're all-stars, the men that make it happen on the floor. One man you haven't mentioned is Steve Kerr. What a job he's done. We all know the story, or many of you might not know the story and be aware of the story. Steve Kerr was a fine player in his own right, was a member of the Phil Jackson Chicago Bulls team that went on to do three.
Michael Jordan's.
The Michael Jordan team, yeah. I say Phil Jackson, the Zen master, but the Michael Jordans, the Scottie Pippins, the Dennis Rodmans, he was a part of that team. He has carried through what he learned, I guess, from those experiences, as well as what he learned from Phil Jackson, who is still seen as probably the greatest NBA coach of all time. He's carried that through, and what a job he has done, because we talk so often in sport about managing egos. It's part of the reason, I guess, we talk so eloquently and such gracefully about Zinedine Zidane, the fact that he managed to control those egos, three Champions Leagues on the bounce with Real Madrid. Steve Kerr does something similar with Kevin Durant, with Steph Curry, with Klay Thompson, with the names that you've mentioned. Each and every one of those in any other era would have been the top dog, the top billing, but he's managed to fashion a real cohesion, a real team ethos there, and it is he that deserves an awful lot of praise in the coming days as well, is it not?
Yeah, it's a very tough job in sport to manage the alpha male, and in the case of Steve Kerr with the Golden State Warriors, he's got three or four alpha males, guys who are normally genuine top five players in the league. He's got three of them at least, and then he's got to make sure that the rest of the team buy into the philosophy, the ethos, into a system where they all get their shots, where they all contribute. None of those top players get the huff, so to speak, and want to go play somewhere else because they're not contributing and not being part of the system that he's put in place. So he was a fine player. He was a 3-point sharpshooter in his career, and he's inherited probably the best shooter in NBA history in Steph Curry. He's got the second best player in the world in Kevin Durant, who just had some phenomenal games. Game three, I think it was, when he just took the game away for 47 points, a 3-pointer with 2 minutes to go to drive a dagger through the heart of Cleveland Cavaliers, and he was phenomenal. Kevin Durant, in many ways, probably outshining LeBron James man for man in the series. LeBron James had other issues trying to carry his whole team, but when you could share around those three, significant amongst those guys. Kevin Durant, as we said, was named the 2018 MVP of the finals for the second consecutive season. Let's just listen to Durant post-match.
All of us, we all want something that's bigger than ourselves. I think we we love to see each other succeed. We love to come together and figure stuff out on the basketball court. And I think tonight, everybody just played their roles well. You know, Steph came out, was aggressive for us early, got us in, set the nice tone for us. And everybody else kind of filled in. So, you know, our defense was great, 34% from the field. I think the whole series, the whole playoffs, our defense has been great. And, you know, we finished it off with a championship. So we got a bunch of guys in the locker room that don't care about anything but just being better basketball players every day and winning. It makes the environment great.
They have set the standard in the NBA, have the Golden State Warriors. That, the thoughts then of the NBA Finals MVP, Kevin Durant. Interesting to hear Mark Archer say there that he is the second best player on the planet. The best player is LeBron James. Some very interesting comments from the Cleveland Cavaliers man coming out after that match. We'll hear from LeBron James when we come back, and we're discussing where next for the King.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome. Football lives at Barasti this summer.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. It is business as usual down here at Barasti. If you are looking for a place to watch any of your sporting needs this afternoon, whether it is the rugby, and I've got a funny feeling rugby will be dominating much of the big screens. We are building up to the big one, South Africa against England. That one kicking off at 7 p.m. local time this evening. Then do pop on down. The doors are open, filling up nicely. We are all tuned in. We're all glued to the television screens as things speak, because of course it is Australia against Ireland. Carl van Roosevelt has the very latest.
Yeah. What I can tell you is it's been the Irish have been hammering the Australians line, but fantastic defense from Australia. Irish fly of Joel Corbery must be kicking himself. He missed the absolute sitter right in front of the post. A penalty there for Ireland. But currently, 52 minutes played. Australia 8, Ireland 6.
All Blacks winners running out, convincing victors in the end. They were 11 points to 8 down at halftime.
Yeah, they trailed at halftime and the French were well in the game. But the French had a controversial sin-binning of one of their players for a high tackle at the start of the second half. And that just seemed to deflate them. The All Blacks had a lot of momentum and ball in the second half. In the last 20 minutes when they started making some substitutions, they really got a roll on, the typical All Blacks roll on. They were running the ball from anywhere. They were finding the half gaps. The support play was great. And they almost looked like running in tries at will for the last 10, 15 minutes. But good. It was the All Blacks' first match of the season. And of course, it's worth noting that they're still missing 4 or 5 of the starters. Kieran Reid, the captain's out with injury. Dane Coles is not there. Brody Retallick's not there as well. And so they are a bit down. Sonny Bill Williams is injured. So they are sort of, it's a great chance for All Blacks.
It's a sobering thought is what it is.
To give some players some game time and give them a chance to sort of push their case for Steve Hansen.
Scary. Absolutely scary. One team that still gives Carl van Roosevelt and South Africans nightmares is Japan. Carl, they were victors earlier today as well. Have you ever...
You always got to bring that up, don't you? I never live that down.
Japan, famous victors over South Africa in the last World Cup. They were in action today as well. And you came bounding in a little earlier this afternoon, Carl, and that was the result in many respects that stood out more for you, because Japan beating Italy.
Beating Italy 34 points to 17 earlier this morning, Chris. And I think that's just kind of... shows you how bad Italy's been this year, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, they're part of the Six Nations. A lot of people have been questioning that decision over the years. They seem to have made, you know, they make 2 strides forward and then 3 strides back. But I think it shows you that Japan's in a healthy state. Of course, they're hosting the World Cup next year. They want to make a massive, massive impact on that tournament. And I think, you know, with the Sun Wolves being playing part of Super Rugby, I think has really, really helped strengthen rugby within Japan. But yeah, that result this morning was rather surprising to me, but great work for the Japanese.
Yeah, the feel-good factor is alive and kicking over there in Japan. Of course, it will be host to the Rugby World Cup. Cannot wait for that, September of 2019. There is the small matter of a Football World Cup before that comes around. Of course, we are building up to that FIFA World Cup, and we will be keeping an eye on the games this evening. We'll be looking back on some of the biggest stories over the course of the past few days as well. But I want to return, if we can, to the NBA Finals. We saw a little earlier today the Golden State Warriors winning, clean sweeping the Cleveland Cavaliers, a 4-0 victory, a third NBA title in the past 4 years for the Golden State Warriors. The big question after this one, though, Mark Archer, is LeBron James. He's left Cleveland once before to go in search of titles. He got his couple down in Miami. Does he now leave once again at the grand old age of, what, 33? I think he'll be 34 by the time that the next season ticks around. Is he off?
15 seasons in the NBA. Well, he's earned the right to go wherever he wants. He now owes nothing back to Cleveland. He came back there. He left there. He was drafted by Cleveland, which was a hometown for him. He then went away to Miami to win some titles. He came back to Cleveland. And in some ways, they've kind of let him down by not giving him the talent that he's needed. Of course, losing Kyrie Irving is the key blow, losing one of their key players. in the off-season. Just don't have enough weapons to compete. Interesting talk today about two things. One, LeBron James having a hand injury that he suffered at the end of game one, where apparently after the J.R. Smith incident, when he forgot what the score was in the final 4 seconds, LeBron was so disappointed because that was the one chance, the one game they had to win away from home to give him some momentum. They didn't have a home court advantage. They needed to win that first game to get give them some hope in the series, and they should have won it. J.R. Smith had a brain fade, and then Kevin Durant apparently went back to the locker room, slapped a whiteboard, and has an injured hand. So a lot of the talk after the finals was, well, when he revealed what actually happened with the hand, and then people the questions of asking about where he's going to go. Before we answer and give our thoughts on where LeBron James might end up, let's just listen to the Cavs star, the King, speak after the finals.
What happened? Self-inflicted. Post-game after game one, very emotional. You know, for a lot of different reasons, understanding how important a game one is on the road for our ball club. What would that have done for us? The way we played, the calls that was made throughout the course of that game. And I had emotions on, you know, the game was taken away from us. I had emotions of you just don't get an opportunity like this on the road versus Golden State to be able to get a game one. And, you know, I let the emotions get the best of me and pretty much played the last three games with a broken hand. So that's what it is. I mean, I have no idea at this point. You know, the one thing that I've always done is consider, you know, obviously my family, understanding, you know, especially where my boys are at this point in their age. They were a lot younger. The last time I made a decision like this 4 years ago, you know, I got a teenage boy, a preteen, and a little girl right now that wasn't around as well. So, you know, sitting down and considering everything, you know, but, you know, my family is a huge part of whatever I've decided to do in my career, and they will continue to be that. So I don't have an answer for you right now as far as that.
LeBron James, the family man there. He's pointing out, Mark Archer, that he has two boys, a little girl. He's got an awful lot more to consider than he did when he, first time round, left Cleveland for South Beach, Florida, with the Miami Heat. What's your gut telling you from what you're reading, from what you're seeing? LeBron James is going to be off again, isn't he?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. His legacy that I think he wants to be remembered by, he's chasing Michael Jordan's 6 rings, and he's getting on now. 33 is no young age for a basketballer. He's in his prime right now. You don't think he's going to probably improve with age at 34, 35, but he's a fantastic athlete. He's in great physical condition, but, you know, here's a guy that's 6'9", 260 pounds. He's got to stay fit, and he played every game this season. Phenomenal workload. He you know, and he played every playoff game. It's hard to say anything bad about the guy, and he's done a great job for Cleveland. He doesn't owe them anything. You wonder if he stayed at Cleveland, they're going to have to find an all-star player to join him. I just don't know if he's got the appeal to stay there, and they're going to have to move a lot of players because they've spent money, but albeit had good money spent or bad money spent. Can they attract a Paul George to Cleveland? Can they attract a star point guard, you know, to go there? That's the question. But why does LeBron have to leave? Well, a lot of the talk is LA for the Lakers. He has two houses in LA, and he's been apparently refurbing one. Now, the Lakers are a poor team, so they also have to find another player to go with LeBron and then juggle around the salary caps. Paul George is the other player they're talking about going to LeBron. Paul George, of course, most of his career with Indiana Pacers, played this season at the Oklahoma City Thunder, had an okay season with them. He's looking to return to LA where he's from. He grew up playing, I think he went to UCLA or one of the college teams there. If LA can get Paul George and LeBron James, that might be interesting for LeBron James.
Is he not missing another one, though? Do they not need another one in there at LA?
Possibly three, which we've seen. The problem is when you go to the Western Conference, you've still got to get past the Golden State Warriors in the playoffs before getting to the finals. And he might just feel. So that's an option for him on the West. The other option, I think, in the West is maybe Houston Rockets, because they have two genuine all-stars. They have CP3, who's a good friend of Chris Paul's, a good friend of LeBron, play the point guard. You've got James Harden, who's a genuine MVP, probably win the MVP this season. And then you put LeBron James in that lineup, Clint Capella as well. And they remember they took Golden State to seven games this year. They were the best team in regular season. That may give them a chance of getting out of the West if he decides to go to the West. Lakers or Houston are the two teams that are interesting. Should he want to stay in the East, what does he do? Does he go to the 76ers, who had a great season, have got lots of cap space because they've got young talent? They've had a couple of first-round picks. They're Ben Simmons, who might be the Rookie of the Year this year, the Aussie, and they've got also Joel Embiid, a genuine big centre. That combination there may balance out with LeBron, and he might. And Cleveland's not that far from Washington. He stays in the East, which is a weaker conference, and we'll think he could get past the West, past the East to the finals to take on the Golden State Warriors with that team. So many questions. So many now the jigsaw starts to move because free agency doesn't start till next week. Which players move in certain directions will influence where LeBron goes or where he ends up?
Here's a question, and I'm sure a number of people listening this afternoon will be asking or shouting at the radio, or you might not, you might just be thinking this one in your head. Is the inconceivable possible? Does he go to Golden State Warriors? Is that possible?
I don't
can't beat them, join them.
Nothing's possible, nothing's impossible, but I don't think the salary caps work.
Okay.
He's on a $35 million salary, and you've got a cap of around $120 million, and it doesn't work. Steph Curry's on a max salary.
Kevin Durant.
I think Kevin Durant took a pay cut to go there to win, but at some stage he's going to want to get paid. You've got Klay Thompson nearing max salary. You know, you've got
Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green,
Livingston. They're going to have to clean out a lot of their guys off to find some room for LeBron. I just don't know if it works. For me personally, it'd be a big shame if he goes to Golden State. He needs to go somewhere else and challenge Golden State. It's almost like Kevin Durant couldn't win at Oklahoma with Russell Westbrook. What does he do? He joins the team that beat them, Golden State, and forms a super team. And so, look, we can't knock LeBron because he went and formed that first super team when he went to Miami with Bosch
and Wade
down there, which dominated the NBA then for that time. So let's wait and see. I don't think Golden State works, but we've got some action in the rugby from Suncorp Stadium, Carl.
Yeah, what I can tell you is a fantastic move by the Australians. Out wide, it's that man Israel Folau. It cruises into the corner for a five-pointer. Fantastic work, Tribe Australia. Australia leading Ireland 13 points to 9 with a conversion still to come.
Absolutely. That is now, 39, as Carl rightly points out, conversion still to come, so Australia could be closing in on a victory. There is still 20 minutes or so to go. Just gone 3:30. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We'll put you in the picture of what's going on in the world of golf. European Tour, it is the Shot Clock Masters. Over in the US as well, it's the FedEx St. Jude Classic. We'll put you up to date with all of those, and we'll continue to build up to the big one. It is South Africa against England in the rugby.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, bringing the football stadium to you this summer.
Welcome back to the show. It is myself, Chris McCarty, Carl Van Roosevelt, Mark Archer with you through all the way until 6 p.m. this evening. We are keeping you up to date with all the live sporting action. We're also discussing one or two of the big stories from the past 7 days as well. Before the break, we did tell you that Australia had crossed over for a try that had given them a 13-9 lead. That isn't necessarily true.
That did not happen. As I said, I was claiming Israel Folau did score a try. However, it was disallowed for tackling a player without the ball, which resulted in a penalty for Ireland. So currently, Australia 8, Ireland 9, 61 minutes played.
18 minutes to go in this one. We will keep an eye on it. I just want to wrap up on all things US sports. Not often we kick off with US sport, but it's important we do so this today, because of course we saw the Golden State Warriors. They were crowned for a third time in the past 4 years NBA Finals champions. They are a class above. We've been discussing as well LeBron James. Let us now hear from Stephen A. Smith. He is a man that has garnered a legion of followers over in the States. He is a pundit, he works for the ESPN, and he's not short of an opinion or two.
We welcome Stephen A. Smith to the program, and Stephen A., it was an odd end, man, because as you heard how I just described it, you were in the building, and it felt like all of the energy and the hope was just sucked out of that building there right before the half. What was that second half like?
Well, it was a no-show by the Cleveland Cavaliers. You don't want to take any credit from their two-time reigning defending NBA champions. Steph Curry was absolutely sensational. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
Kevin Durant recorded a triple-double worthy of the MVP award, and they were just efficient. Backdoor cuts, fast break points, pushing the ball, making the extra pass, sharing the basketball, trusting one another. I actually spent the entire second half thinking that Kevin Durant was trying to give the MVP award to Steph Curry. They had the luxury of toying with the Cleveland Cavaliers to that degree. But I wish I could just leave it towards the superiority of the Golden State Warriors and leave it at that, Scott. You're far kinder than me. The Cleveland Cavaliers didn't show up. The effort was glaringly lacking. It was an embarrassing effort as far as I was concerned. They quit as a team. I thought LeBron James tried early on, but eventually he got to a point where it looked like he quit. and the rest of the team just followed. There were so many defensive lapses, backdoor cuts, wide open threes, wide open jump shots, miscommunication. For this to be the NBA Finals and to see such an effort being put forth by any team gifted enough to make it to the NBA Finals, it was just incredibly disappointing. It was a deplorable, deplorable effort by Cleveland.
Stephen A. Smith wasting, and Mark Archer's chuckling in front of me as well.
He not mincing his words, is he?
He does not mince his words, does Stephen A. Smith. There is a reason that he has garnered such a following over there. But, I mean, is that unfair? Is that unfair? They're 3-0 down, okay? LeBron James has come out afterwards, Mark Archer, to say that he's basically been playing with a broken hand. You can understand, and listen, for the life of me, I don't like seeing any sporting team lie down and roll over for another, but you can understand that 3-0, a long way back, those closing stages, you can understand that at the end of the day, these players are humans. You can understand why the head's dropped.
It's a massively long season, and when they went 3-0 down, no team in NBA history has come back from a 0-3 deficit to win a series. It's on Cleveland's home court, so they've won it in Cleveland. The crowd would have started walking out with 5-10 minutes to go because I want to go home and miss the traffic and do other things. And it was just almost like a procession, like the Lord Mayor's procession coming in, and the Golden State Warriors were just doing what they had to do, and the game was done. The series was done. They were going to be the winners. I'm sure they would have loved to win it back in Golden State if it went another game, but you want to wrap it up. You want to get the victory, and they started celebrating that third NBA title in the last 4 years, the dynasty that they've created there under Steve Kerr.
Question for you both, one-word answers or a couple of words answers, depending on who you choose. LeBron James, who is he lining up for next year? You first, Mark Archer.
I'll say LA, but he needs the other pieces to come together for him to go to LA.
LA Lakers for
LA
you.
Lakers for sure, yeah.
You going to LA Lakers,
yeah,
as well?
I just think he's quite established there. He's got two homes there. I also think from a salary perspective, they almost really match what he's asking for. And he can still be the main man in the team there, you know. I think if he goes to Houston, which we said off air, it's quite a nice, easy fit for him. But I don't think James Harden's going to welcome him with open arms down in Houston. I don't believe he'll go to Golden State because it will be a team that will have no competition. And I don't know, 76ers, I don't think it's such an attractive offer for LeBron. So I see him in LA come the beginning of next season.
4001, let us know what you're hearing on the ground. What are you hearing and what do you feel? LeBron James, where should he go to see out? I would imagine it would be the final few years of what is already an illustrious career. Now then, I just want to finish on US sport by talking, it's not often we do this, talking all things ice hockey. Now you, Carl Van Roosevelt, run recently the Boston Marathon.
That's right, yeah.
You went over a few days beforehand and you immersed yourself in the local sports scene there. You watched a bit of baseball, you watched a bit of NBA, and you did go and see the Boston Bruins in the world of ice hockey as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It was part of the playoffs against the Maple Leafs, and I must say, what an amazing sport to watch live, and as you say, the speed of it. You know, I didn't quite realize how quick the game is. But yeah, fantastic to see, and of course, the Stanley Cup got won this week by the Capitals. A big, big, big surprise, and yeah, the hockey season, I think, it was... What could I say? A lot of different results, yeah, in the season for this season, Chris.
Well, put us in the picture then, Mark Archer, because, the Washington Capitals, it's been a long time. In fact, I don't think they've ever won a Stanley Cup, but it's been a long time for the city of Washington for them to be celebrating. A little like the Cleveland Cavs a couple of years back, it had been a long time since the city of Cleveland had celebrated a major sporting success. The Capitals did so against the fairy tale story, in many respects, of the year, the Golden Knights from Las Vegas. In their debut campaign, they got all the way to the Stanley Cup, but it just proved, I guess, one hurdle too many, a 4-1 victory for the Capitals. From what you saw of it, richly deserved?
Yeah, they were the best team. They won game five a day or two ago, 4-3. Clinched the series 4-1, so pretty convincing win to take the Stanley Cup home for the first time to Washington, D.C. So an amazing, they've been a great franchise for many years, but have never been able to win the Stanley Cup. Vegas, as you said, an amazing fairy tale story. It's their first year as a franchise in American sport. The first professional sports franchise also to be in Las Vegas. They made it all the way to the finals, almost like a real fairy tale story there, because they had a lot of journeymen, they had a lot of veteran players, and a lot of young players who hadn't made it with other clubs to cobble together a team that to go all the way to the Stanley Cup finals. So you must give them their credit as well. Also, spare a thought for the Stanley Cup MVP, Alex Ovechkin. The star player, 14-year career, he's 11 times All-Star, 607 goals, 1,122 points. He's now a Stanley Cup champion. So for a guy that's been one of the greats of the NHL for many years now, Alex Ovechkin, to finally get the title meant so much for him. Let's just have a quick listen to the final minute or the final seconds of that victory with the Washington Capitals winning Game 5, 4-3.
Eller for the draw! And as the puck drops, the words that DC fans have been waiting to hear since 1974, the Washington Capitals are the 2018 Stanley Cup champions. It's not a dream. It's not a desert mirage. It's Lord Stanley, and he is coming to Washington.
Unbelievable. Look at the celebrate. That's what it's all about. These guys are going crazy. A team of destiny jobs right from the drop of the puck. These guys got it done. And how about that? The guy's not playing, coming off the bench celebrating. This is what it's all about when you put the skates on when you're 5 years old. You celebrate now. Great job by them. Congratulations to the Washington Capitals. They're well-deserved and a long time coming.
The heartbreak of so many springs is over. The Washington Capitals are Stanley Cup champions for the first time in franchise history. Lars Eller, the game-winning goal in the third period. The Capitals come from a goal down, and Lord Stanley is about to make an appearance, and he is finally coming to the District of Columbia. The drought's over. 43 seasons, and the Capitals have won it here in Las Vegas and celebrate on the ice, mobbing Braden Holtby. Lars Eller will never have to buy a drink in Denmark again.
You got that right, or anything.
Or in Washington, for that matter. Eller, the game winner on a Brett Connolly shot, and the celebration begins. Down on the ice, the training staff is on the ice. Ted Leonsis and the ownership group of Monumental Sports and Entertainment are out as well. And championship hats are being distributed. There will be a handshake momentarily, but hockey season is over. And it has ended in glory for the Washington Capitals.
It sure has. Outstanding. Ovechkin and Backstrom, a moment. These guys been together the whole time. Great. Real emotional. You got to love it, though.
That is the celebratory scenes over there in Washington. And as Mark Archer right points out, Alexander Ovechkin, 14-year veteran. 2004, was it? He was picked up as a first-round draft. He was the first pick, in actual fact, for the Washington Capitals. Great, great scenes for Washington. Unfortunate for the Golden Knights, who have been the ragtag bunch in many respects. They kind of pilfered one or two of the players that weren't deemed good enough for other franchises at the close season, and for them to go all the way through to the Stanley Cup, still a great story.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see now that we've seen this franchise work in Las Vegas. Will we see, you know, NFL moving there? Will we see other franchises there? Because definitely there were a lot of questions of Las Vegas being a hub for obviously for American sports, but it seems like, as you said, the hockey team did a fantastic job there in their first season.
Good question, that, Mark Archer. Is that something we can now see a lot more?
I'll have to check, but I think the what was the Oakland Raiders are heading there.
Yeah, they are.
In the next one or two seasons, maybe the season after next. So they are now. Obviously, they've changed the legislation, the bookmaking legislation in the U.S., and that's always been a big issue with going to Las Vegas with professional sports teams. But a lot of that's been, those rules have been laxed, and now we see the opening up of other sort of entities and states to do that. So it'd be interesting to see, but it's a great place, Vegas. Nothing better to go to Vegas and actually watch some professional sport.
Oh, absolutely.
You've been lost there on many occasions, haven't you, Chris?
I've been to Vegas a number of times, yes, but to add a few sporting entities to the mix, I don't think I'll ever come back if I go there. Again, if there's football teams and NFL teams and ice hockey teams, you may never see me again, or certainly the missus might not see me again. 69 minutes on the clock down at Suncorp Brisbane. We have had a score, though, a penalty for Australia. This one getting tight, Carl.
Yeah, absolutely. Australia been really, really pushing up against the line of the Irish. Irish making a mistake on defence, and as you say, converted there by Bernard Foley, the three three-pointer. Australia 11, Ireland 9, and there's just about 10 minutes left to play in this test match, Chris McCarthy.
There certainly is. We are, what, just over an hour out from the start of the women's final over at Roland Garros. It is the French Open, as we see. Israel Folau, my God, what an athlete that man is. He really is the best 15 in world rugby. When we come back, we'll tell you about that women's French Open. We'll keep you up to date with the closing stages of this one as well. It is Australia against Ireland. You are listening to The Grill. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
It certainly does. 5 days out from the FIFA World Cup, but it is try time down in Brisbane. Carl van Roosevelt.
Oh, it's so tight down in Brisbane, Chris McCarthy, but what I can tell you, it's that man, David Pocock, just smashing through the Irish defence, scoring the much-needed five-pointer for Australia, and I think it's all done and dusted. The Aussies will be winning this test match. And as I say, we just watch it again. A fantastic effort there by Pocock. Takes the short ball and over he goes. The upper body strength of him is incredible. And as you say, Chris McCarthy, currently Ireland, Australia are leading Ireland 16 points tonight. Bernard Foley still to come with a conversion.
The ironic thing on all of this is Johnny Sexton, the best fly half in Northern Hemisphere, certainly. Starting on the bench, he's come on. And I'm not going to lay the blame at him. Of course, it's not his fault. But they've lost control since he's got on. Australia have seemed to grow into their task.
Yeah, I think it's you've got to take your hat off to the Australian forwards, Chris. They just seem to have got a lot more momentum. They're getting quicker to the breakdown. Of course, Pocock, one of those boys causing all the damage at breakdown time. And it just seems like Australia picked up a lot more momentum in the second half. Got to give it to Kurt Bebil. He's really, really with his boot, directed the game quite nicely at first centre. And I think a bit like this morning's game, Australia definitely the better team in the second half.
You were mentioning as well when you popped in this afternoon, just before we came live on air, an awful lot of people that you're speaking to. And of course, you're a former rugby man. Rugby is your number one sport, Carl. A lot of people you've been talking to have been talking up Ireland as potential winners of the Rugby World Cup next year. A lot of people saying that they've got the tools to stop the All Blacks in their tracks. Watching Australia today, and I know, I appreciate, one swallow does not make a summer, but watching them today, it does remind me that Michael Checker, what he got out of that team in 2015, they were beaten finalists against the All Blacks in 2015. Are we starting to see them now, a year out? Is this now the start of a new team and maybe one of the dark horses next year?
I think you can't rule them out of the Rugby World Cup. They've been in such fine form in the Six Nations Championship. We've had Leinster dominating European club rugby for a couple of seasons now, winning the Champions Cup this year. They're an extremely well-coached team by Joe Smith. He has all the players doing their roles. They play well as a team. They've got that half-back, fly-half combination, Connor Murray, Johnny Sexton, who are so organised in structure in the way they play. They play a very simple game plan and all the players do their job. So they're an extremely tough team to beat. I think it's too early to say they're favourites for a Rugby World Cup, but from the Northern Hemisphere, you've got to think that they've got a chance. The one thing that may keep them... Oh, as they get a chance down here.
There's a chance here.
The one thing that may be still holding them back come World Cup time is if they do have a couple of key injuries to key players, whether it be Connor Murray, whether it be Johnny Sexton, whether it be a CJ Stander, whether it be, you know,
Tag Furlong,
Kian Healy, they probably still don't have the depth of player who can come in the squad and really make a difference. But they'll be there or thereabouts. They're one of the teams that you don't want to play in the early stages of the knockouts at the Rugby World Cup. And let's wait and see. They've been pretty disappointing in World Cups to date. They've been a good team for a long time, but haven't really performed to their maximum potential in a Rugby World Cup.
I mean, I definitely think that they got a great chance for next year, make no doubt about it. But I think where the Irish, to me, are struggling at the moment is consistency. The All Blacks are able to beat teams on bad days. When the All Blacks are playing bad, they're still able to get the W. Ireland have to play exceptional to get the victory. And they seem to be a bit up and a bit down. They play some sensational rugby where they could beat the All Blacks on any given day. But then the next day, you know, they could go lose to one of these smaller teams. And I think Joe Smith just needs to work on the consistency. If they can get that consistency, if they can be a more consistent team, Chris McCarthy, I definitely think they've got a fantastic chance in Japan next year.
And what about the Wallabies? You know, watching them today, Michael Hooper, David Pocock in the breakdown, they're as good as any. I look at Kirtley Beale as well, who I know has had his disappointments, but again, looks as if he's finding his best form. You've mentioned as well Bernard Foley at 10. Did they have the makings? Appreciate that we're still a year plus out from a Rugby World Cup. I appreciate as well that All Blacks have had the hoodoo sign over Australia in recent years when it comes to the Bledisloe Cup, etc. But do we, when we look at Australia, do we think that they are capable of putting something together?
I definitely think they are, Chris. You know, Australia will always be there. And I think the big thing for the Australians at the moment is that their forward pack, they seem to have got their front row sorted out. We have always been struggling at that scrum time for a long, long time. But they just definitely have seemed to have bolstered up that front row, which to me is very, very, very important for them. So they're very, very competitive in the tight phase of the game. And you mentioned they seem to have got the 9 and 10 combination nicely now with Guinea and Foley. That seems to be working very, very well for Australia. So I definitely think Australia, yeah, they can produce the goods on the day for sure.
Keep an eye on that one. We're also building up Wales there over in Argentina this summer.
Wales
as well.
Argentina, that'll be an interesting match because the Jaguares, who play in Super Rugby, are pretty much a substitute Argentinian team, and they've had a good season this season. I think they've won 7 or 8 matches, including beating the Auckland Blues in Auckland. They've had wins away from home, which has been the hard thing for them in the past, and they'll be within a decent shout of playing Wales. Long way to travel for them. Of course, Wales played that test match in the US against South Africa a week or so ago.
In Washington, won that match. In Washington. So of course,
and a lot of the Welsh players, it's a long, old season that the Northern Hemisphere teams have come into now. Their domestic seasons have all ended in the last couple of weeks. A lot of the big-name players were on the Lions tour last year. They didn't really get an off-season last season. They've gone through the Northern Hemisphere season. They're now on summer tours. It's a tough old game, rugby, when you don't get much break.
History being made in Johannesburg as well. You were remarking again off-air, Carl. You were speaking an awful lot before we went live this afternoon, but you were pointing out that history will be made from a South African point of view, and yes. And this is a story that will transcend not only rugby but transcend sport, this, because South Africa have named in 137 years their first black captain.
Yeah, absolutely, and a big congratulations to Siya Kolisi. I'm sure all the boys from Grey PE down in Port Elizabeth will be going absolutely crazy when he leads the Bucks onto the team today, but well deserved. He's had a fantastic season. He's been captain in the Stormers, he's been one of their stalwart players, and Siya's been playing a lot of good rugby, and I think it's, you know, also a great statement from where the country's come. You know, for us in 1994, we had the first democratic elections, and I think, you know, it's a move in the right direction. I think it's a long, long way that we've come, and, you know, best of luck to Siya Kolisi. I think he's going to be up against it today, because I kind of fancy the English in today's test match. The Vanipola brothers are back. Billy Vanipola, more importantly, is back in that number 8 jersey. We know how hard he can carry. Eddie Jones has got quite defensive. He's put Elliot Daly at fullback. Obviously, in anticipation that Andre Pollard will be putting up a lot of high balls today, and that English outfit looking very, very good.
How has that news been treated over in South Africa? Has it been welcomed?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I think Siya Kolisi is a very likable guy. You know, black, white, pink, or whoever you might be, will get behind him as a Springbok captain, and I think it's great news in South Africa, and it's very, very positive for rugby. It's very, very positive for the country and what direction we're moving. So, and I think he'll do a good job for South Africa.
And you've said it as well. It's on merit. It's not a token gesture, and that's important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think Siya Kolisi for a long, long time has been in the starting lineup of the box. And as I said, you know, he does the jersey justice. But I think he will realize now, being the captain of the South African Springboks is a very, very tough job. With that comes a lot of pressure, a lot of expectation, and I just kind of hope that they've groomed him for, you know, the media and everything else that comes with having that job.
South Africa against England, that one getting off at 7 p.m. We will be off air by then. We finish up at 6 o'clock. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. As I say, get involved in the conversation. 4001. Plenty more to get through. And I've got a little quiz, a FIFA World Cup quiz for the boys as well. We'll be giving them that in the second hour. Stay tuned.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.